This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. A relatively quiet, largely non-controversial crossover week here at your state legislature. In studio to review are Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Nice to see you both.
Nice to see
you too. Hi, guys.
Crossover is the self-mandated, though not totally a hard and fast deadline, that emerges every other year here at the General Assembly. General idea is a bill has to be voted through one chamber or it's dead. Of course, legislators can find a way of resurrecting things. Crossover has been a way to cram stuff through with little debate, transparency, and public input, but that wasn't the case this year. There were no significant surprises or particularly controversial policy measures. Is that because Republicans no longer have the tool of a veto-proof majority or some other reason, Rob?
I think that's a big factor. I mean, I think the reality is that in years past, we've seen just the big shovel or maybe more like a bulldozer come through to pass legislation in the waning hours of the crossover deadline. And this year it was a much more sedate experience. I think that's a big part of it. There is this, you know, the reason they wanted to get out of town was because there's this big conservative conference in Asheville. And Phil Berger, I guess, is a big wig in that conference. It's definitely a change, and I think it's driven mostly by the fact that they realize that they're not going to be able to have as ambitious of an agenda. We've seen other times in the past where the legislatures wanted to get out of town all for other reasons. You know, you've got some personal factor in the life of the speaker or the president of the Senate, and that's a reason to cut things short and get out of town. But in this case, I really do think it was mostly driven by the fact that they just realized there was not as much of a possibility of pursuing an ambitious agenda.
Well, it was a big surprise. Not only did they finish, as you mentioned, Jeff, with little controversy, they actually finished early. I mean, the deadline was May 9th. The Senate was the last to finish up
right.
Wednesday at lunchtime. I don't know that that has ever happened in the history of the General Assembly. And, you know, as you mentioned and Rob alluded to, usually there's a big push. There's very, very late night sessions. I mean, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. There are committee meetings that nobody knows what's happening. It's just a flurry of confusion. And it was very different this year. It was almost sort of haunting for those of us that
like
have
it was
been
supposed
doing
to work.
for a long time.
Do you credit divided government?
I don't know that it's divided government. Probably several things. One, with Republicans being in charge for the last 8 years, a lot of the heavy lifts that they have tried to do that have been priorities for them has already happened. This is almost a session of maintaining and keeping a momentum going for them. On the Democrat side, there were plenty of things proposed. There were a lot of amendments to bills that we saw as they went through, but all very orderly. And the thing that surprised me, too, is I was watching the debate on these bills and the votes on these bills. Two things struck me. One, that how many were not controversial and how many, there may have been one or two or, 10 votes against, but for the most part, there was wide agreement. The other thing I thought was kind of telling was from both sides, you heard this being said. Let's just get it through our body and we'll let them fix it on the other side. Now, you talk about Republicans and Democrats and the fighting and the controversy that we have there. There's also been plenty of fighting and controversies between the House and the Senate.
Right.
So I don't know whether that's a preview of things to come, that we'll see more agreement between the House and the Senate and working things through. But
I was just going to say the three things to me that really stand out that it remains a scandal that they weren't addressed are Medicaid expansion, gerrymandering reform, and gun violence. We saw nothing of substance on those very important topics. And while there's still chance to deal with them after crossover, I still think it's rather scandalous that we're well into May without dealing with any of those issues.
To Rob's point on that, Medicaid expansion, that will be or will not be part of the budget discussion. I think that's the other thing that we're seeing this year that may be a little bit different is rather than having thousands and thousands of individual bills that deal with lots of things, we're seeing so much focus on the budget. And I think we'll see, this session is far from over and we'll see a lot of those things. Also, as far as redistricting, I agree with Rob. I mean, that's a big deal and something that I think they're going to have to deal with this session, but they're waiting for these lawsuits to be determined by the United States Supreme Court before they do anything. We've had bills filed on it, but we'll see how that works going forward.
This is nowhere in my notes, so real admitted curveball here, but I can't help but think you offer those up, and I think about what's happening in New York right now with measles outbreaks in this country. Is it incumbent upon this legislature to do something with vaccinations in the short term? Just real quick.
I mean, I think it's an absolutely essential topic. It's a scandal that we're not, that this is happening in 2019. As to what the specific things they can do to mandate that people start getting their kids vaccinated, that's a challenge. But I think that if there are things out there to do, if we can look very carefully at how religious exemptions are applied, I mean, we've got schools where half the kids aren't getting vaccinated. Something's up there, and it's going to be a real public health crisis for us if we don't address it.
I agree with Rob. What I think you may see here, though, Jeff, is watching states like New York and California and some other states where there have been the outbreaks, see how they handle it, see how some of those questions about it, I mean, it has to be handled correctly and in the right way. And so I think for our lawmakers, my advice would be, let's keep an eye on it. Let's watch and see what's happening in other states and start learning how they're dealing with it, some things that we may be able to apply here.
We have had chickenpox outbreaks, though, in North Carolina already, where people have not been getting their kids vaccinated. That's already happening. So keep that in mind.
One bill that did advance out of the Senate would increase the eligibility for private school vouchers. Republicans have long touted school choice, and this program was first rolled out to give low-income students an opportunity to attend private schools using, at least in part, some state money. Conservatives want to extend access to children in families that make up to $71,000 annually. Democrats disapproved, noting that there is presently more than $12 million in unused funds sitting in the coffers of this program. Becky, you don't typically like government waste. Why is this expansion necessary now?
Because so many parents are taking advantage of it. So many families are finding the answer to their children's educational needs through school choice, and these school vouchers is one of those programs that's been doing it. And so I think there are 562 students that are on the waiting list who have expressed an interest for these but don't qualify under the current limitations, the eligibility criteria. This would expand that to at least capture those 562 families who have expressed an interest in doing this. So it's a good idea that's working, and the intent is to make this available to even more parents, offer more opportunity to more kids across North Carolina.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that's the goal from the conservative side. I mean, Paul Stamm, the former House Majority Leader, said it years ago that he wanted every school in North Carolina to be a voucher school, and I think that's the right's agenda here. I think it's a disaster. I think these schools are unaccountable. They've been unsuccessful. We are funneling public money to schools that teach that dinosaurs and humans walk together, that discriminate against kids because their parents are gay. I mean, this is a very serious problem. It should be zeroed out. Governor Cooper proposed phasing the program out. I think that's the right path to take. The program, it was initially pitched as something for poor kids. Now it's going to be expanded to the middle class. It's not been used. It's unaccountable. We don't know how these schools are performing. There's one study at NC State that has been debunked. I just think this is an unfortunate step, and I hope it doesn't become law.
Well, parents are choosing these every day. And when you talk about accountability, I mean, who is more accountable than parents of children and responsible for their education, what's best for them? Just goes back to, you know, who believes that, who is best to make the decisions for different kids and their opportunities. And a lot of people believe that those decisions need to be made by parents and around kitchen tables, not with some bureaucrat sitting in Raleigh or in, you know, a big office building.
There's not as much oversight over private schools as there is public schools in the state. Is there a need for more private school oversight?
Well, I mean, that's certainly something to look at. But, I mean, when you have parents looking at this and making a decision, doing research, figuring out what is best for their kids, and, you know, how do you do that? I mean, is it done by test scores alone? And there's a lot of things. There's a lot of reasons why parents choose options outside the traditional school system, and it's not just test scores. There's a lot of other things that go into that consideration, and probably as many different considerations as there are parents who are making those choices.
I just will say that public schools are a much bigger thing than just a commodity to be chosen by parents. Public schools are the single most important public institution in our society. They are the place that we come together. It is the place we make society together. And it is a disaster to take that away. And that's why the teachers were in the streets last week. It wasn't so much for themselves. Teachers were marching in Raleigh because of this very phenomenon. They know that public education as we understand it is under assault.
NC Warren, an environmental watchdog group, filed an ethics complaint against Senate Minority Leader Dan Blue of Wake County on Wednesday. Blue's law firm has done work on behalf of Duke Energy as it relates to the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. Blue has also sponsored and voted for legislation that would benefit Duke. Blue told reporters, quote, "This out-of-the-sky accusation is absolutely absurd," close quote. Is this a frivolous complaint or, as we say in our industry, is there a there?
I mean, bless NC Warren's heart for raising the issue of Duke's control of the General Assembly, because I don't think there's any doubt that Duke runs the General Assembly when it comes to a lot of important energy issues, and that's something that our state ought to address. Dan Blue is one of the most honorable members of the General Assembly, and I can't imagine that Dan would ever, he's one of the most ethical people I've met. So that strains credulity a little bit there to think that Dan would ever, that there'd be anything there with respect to him. But I don't think there's any doubt that Duke has a very big influence over the General Assembly. And that ethics issues in general at the General Assembly have not been held up to the light of day in recent years as they should. These kinds of accusations should be thoroughly and publicly investigated. We need to shine more light on the process of the General Assembly. I know there was a complaint filed against Representative Jason Sain not too long ago about making similar allegations about that he was sponsoring legislation for groups that had given him campaign contributions, and all those kinds of things should be looked at very carefully. In this case, I applaud NC Warren for trying to hold Duke's feet to the fire, but I can't imagine that Dan Blue, in this case, is would be guilty of it. But let's see what they find out.
I'll just agree with Rob. You know, as far as NC Warren is concerned, bless their hearts. You know, if you're going to start making ethics accusations against 30-year veterans of the General Assembly who have, in my view, have served with just incredible honor and a flawless record, you know, you better be sure what you're going after. And that's what happens with these things. And that's the danger of anybody being able to make accusations. And again, if you're going to make accusations, you ought to have your ducks in a row and you ought to know what you're talking about. As Rob said, I've known, as Rob has, and many across North Carolina know Dan Blue and have for years. This is a ludicrous accusation, and I think it discredits NC Warren. It discredits any kind of allegations against any of this stuff, in my view.
I just hope that, though, that, you know, any kind of allegation like this, let's deal with it publicly. I'm sure Dan would be all for, let's get this out in the open, let's make everything transparent. I think we'll find, you know, if we find then that he's completely in the clear, which I'm sure he would be. But I don't doubt, however, that Duke, again, wields a heavy hand at the General Assembly and uses its campaign contributions to influence policy outcomes. And they are a very big dog in our General Assembly and one we need to, I think, pay more attention to.
Finally, U.S. Senator Tom Tillis has a notable or significant Republican primary opponent. Garland Tucker, a Raleigh businessman with deep pockets, is going to make the incumbent work for the nomination. Rob, this thing looks like it could become a Trump love fest, which I know has you really excited.
Well, you know, Tom Tillis has, you know, a year ago he was talking big about holding the Mueller, being serious about the Mueller report and making sure Russia wasn't involved in our politics. And he was talking about standing up to Trump on immigration and for humane immigration policies and a lot of sort of reasonable, almost middle of the road positions. As soon as a little shot across the bow came about a threat of a primary, he did what one editorial page called the flip-flop of the ages. He has, I mean, even I get inundated with campaign finance, campaign contribution requests from Tillis on a daily basis, professing his loyalty to Trump in all of its most revolting guises. So he is doing his darndest to be a Trump loyalist, and I think you're absolutely right. That's what's going to happen, and I think it's sad. It's a tragedy because I think in his heart, Tom Tillis knows that Donald Trump is a liar and a charlatan, and the fact that he has to profess his loyalty to him is a sad commentary on our politics.
I don't think it's sad at all. I think it's healthy, and I think this is exactly what we want elections to do. I think it would have been foolish of Tom Tillis or anybody else to think that he would not get a primary opponent. I mean, this is a big race. It's going to be a big election in 2020. There have been conservatives and Republicans who have questioned some things that Tom Tillis has done. There have been a lot of questions about a lot of things that our elected officials do, and I think it's healthy through the election process to have questions asked, to be able to, and to be put in a position where you defend your positions and explain things. I think this is healthy. I think it's healthy for North Carolina. I think it's healthy for the Republican Party. And I look forward to, you know, listening to the debate, hearing what the different positions are. Garland Tucker is a formidable primary candidate, it appears so far, to Senator Tillis. So, you know, I think elections are times to talk about ideas and to offer those to the voters and let voters make decisions. And I think this is all a healthy part of what our democracy represents.
I'll just say that in an era in which Donald Trump, though, is the most important a seminal figure in American politics. One cannot be, to me, to my way of thinking, a credible politician unless you take a stance on Donald Trump. And if you're going to take a stance that you agree with Donald Trump and you admire Donald Trump and you want to stand with Donald Trump, I think that's a sad commentary on Tom Tillis, because I think we all know in his heart he doesn't really believe that. But he's doing it basically out of political, he's putting his personal political future ahead of that of the country. And I think that's sad.
I think that, yeah, I mean, I understand and I respect Rob's view on this, but I think it's very skewed. Don't forget that most North Carolinians who voted in the last presidential election supported Donald Trump. Rob, I'm well aware that you are not a Donald Trump fan, but there are a lot of people across North Carolina who have supported the president and, you know, will most likely support the president in 2020 and will support candidates who they perceive are supporting the president because of many of the things that he has done to turn the economy around, put tax cuts in place, remove regulations. Our economy is strong. People are getting back to work. And a lot of people really like that about President Trump. This is what this whole election is going to be about, these kind of discussions.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekend.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.